season of the One Board Podcast is brought to you by Bellwether Games. Discover joy when you play one of their expanding lineup of fun and diverse games. Bellwether Games are both high quality and enjoyable for the whole family. Visit bellwethergames.com to explore all their titles and find a new addition for your collection today. Hey, this is Ryan with the One Board Podcast, and this week with me, as always, is Rick White, the creator of the Jan Sport Backpack. Rick, how are you doing today?
You know it. Jan, being my best friend growing up, always playing all kinds of sports, carrying around a frisbee, a soccer ball, a golf club in her hand, and I'm like, Jan, I think you need a bag for all that sporting equipment, and voila, Jan Sport Backpacks, that's where they come from.
That is what they mean by, and the rest is history.
Right.
Thank you for clarifying all that. Man, that's good stuff.
No problem.
Educating our listeners, always. So, Rick, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty well. We're in a kind of weird break for, I guess, Easter. I don't know what our school says is the reason that we're on break, but Friday I had off, and I'll have off on Monday as well. So, Sarah and I are using it as an opportunity to catch up on a lot of stuff. She's painting our guest bedroom while I record. So, equal amount of labor involved in both of those.
That seems super fair. You have the burden of talking to me, and she has the burden of painting. So,
yes. I also did my taxes, or our taxes, this morning. So I have done my fair share. It's not manual labor, but, you know, I'm working that mind so hard. That's true.
It's a mental workout, as they say.
Yeah.
Letting your brain do those sweet, sweet bicep curls.
Right.
Yeah. So, Rick, we're going to be talking about, first up, what we've been playing. It's become a staple of this season of the podcast. We're in season two of the podcast. And we are going to be talking a little about the games that we've been playing and things that we've been enjoying or not enjoying. And so, Rick, you've had a busy week. Have you been playing anything?
Well, not during this week, I haven't. But I did have last weekend a couple of opportunities to play games. We had a game night at my school, and so the high schoolers set it up, and about 30 to 40 of them showed up, and we just had all the games out, and you could pick what to play. I actually made it a little more competitive and a little more desirable for them to play, I guess, because I said if you beat me in a game, you end up, you can exempt a quiz in my class. So kind of sweeten the pot a little bit there. They kind of cheated the system in that they broke out Guess Who so that they could beat me in like a minute or two. And so I ended up playing like 8 rounds of Guess Who. But we played Sushi Go Party with them. Sushi Go Party is the kind of, I guess, grown-up version of Sushi Go. And we've talked about it a couple of times on the podcast. But for those students, they really like the artwork. They catch on to the mechanics really quickly. And for some reason, it's been very popular with them. And so we broke that out with a few of the students and played that. That was pretty fun.
I think one of the strengths of Sushi Go Party over some of the other party games and the original Sushi Go is the ability to vary up the menu and swap out pieces on the fly. So, like, after you finish a game, one game is 3 rounds, just like Sushi Go. But then you get the opportunity to, the next game, you just play with a different setup or change the menu. Did you guys play with a pretty traditional menu, or did you try some different
things? We played
with
the Sushi Go, like, regular setup. Okay. And that's generally what I've played with. Just because every time I break it out, it's probably with people that haven't played it that often. So I'm hoping to be able to, get into a few of the other cards. There's quite a few on there that I have not played with yet. So I'm hoping that maybe in a future hangout, either like with students or maybe with my family, that we can break that game out. The Sunday after that, so last Sunday, we then went up to my mother and father-in-law's house. Because it was my mother-in-law's birthday, And this was kind of special because it was the first time that each of the children had a significant other there. My brothers-in-law have recently have girlfriends that they met recently. How would you say that? Began to date recently, I guess is the best way to say that.
There we go.
And so this was the first time we met her brother Ryan's girlfriend. And so we had games for eight. Now, you and I have published on the website before games for five. And it's kind of weird because at eight players, you know, you're kind of just in the realm of party games almost because, I mean, at eight, it's a party. So one of the games, though, that I brought out was Deception, Murder in Hong Kong, which we featured, I think, on the podcast last year, got its own review. And part of my reason going there was because we were a bunch of, you know, adults, all at least 25 years old. And so, you know, didn't want it to just be this like cutesy game and, you know, Murder in Hong Kong. It's not like bad, but it is about murder. And so that's a game I broke out. I think the my wife's family likes kind of the deduction elements. We've played a lot of Chameleon and have played Werewords. We actually played Werewords as well. But I think this kind of adds a little more of a board gamey component to it. I don't know. It feels like more. And so it was, it went over really well. We played three rounds of it, I believe, rotating off who was the clue giver. And so for those of you that might have missed it before, it's kind of a hidden role game similar to a werewolf where one person is a murderer. Every player, except for the clue giver, has eight cards, four that are clues and four that are ways in which the murder was committed. One person who has a murderer identity card picks one of each of theirs, and then the clue giver spends the game trying to get everyone to deduce that that is the murderer and figure out which of the two items were selected. And so we had some good discussions. Everybody was contributing, and everybody, I think, played their special roles really well. One thing about hidden deduction games is if you have people in your group that are really bad at lying, it can become not all that fun. But I think we had a good setup, and so that game went over really well. I've had some groups where it did not, and it was a little discouraging, but that was definitely the most fun I'd had with that game. It was really good.
That's really good. Anytime you can get the family around and enjoy something, you know, I think about some of the times that we've played this past November, we got to play Downforce with Aaron's family, and it went over so well. We played, I think, six or seven games of Downforce on Thanksgiving Day. And so it was definitely when a game clicks with people, it's so satisfying to see it work well. So very cool, man.
Yeah. How about you, Ryan? What games have you been playing lately?
Yeah, so going off of our, we just finished up our Spring Into Gaming series. We did some posts on oneboardfamily.com about different spring games, games that had to do with harvesting and vegetables and stuff like that. So I played Garden Dice a couple nights ago with one of my friends, Josh. And instead of playing like two normal human beings where we're trying to, you know, plant our seeds and harvest our crop and gain points, instead we played maliciously and spitefully, and I started eating all of the vegetables as they were coming up out of the ground with a rabbit. And that's part of the game. That's one of the mechanics. That's the take that mechanic in that game. And it worked pretty well because I was like, hey, Josh, take that. And then he came back at me and he also ate my crops, and it turned into a pretty big disaster. It was a nice, you know, I'm going to eat everything you plant. Please stop trying to win. And the score was ridiculously low. In fact, I scored no bonuses at the end of the game. So just a lesson out there, kids, don't play for spite. So
yeah, there you go. Yeah. I, had heard you talk about Garden Dice a few times and thought you were just saying like harvest dice in a weird way, that you had gotten it like confused. So, it is its own game. It is not the same thing.
So Garden Dice, then you have Harvest Dice, then you have Dice Harvest. I think those are the three.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, it is pretty ridiculous.
Come on.
So Harvest Dice is the Roll and Write game that we reviewed on One Board Family last week. And then Garden Dice is the one Veggie Dice. That's the other one I'm thinking about. Anyway, Garden Dice is actually a game I'm forgetting the name of the company that published it, but Josh Capel did the artwork for it. Beautiful game, looks really, really nice on the table, and you've got this grid of eight. I believe it's 8x8. It's 6x6, because what you have to do is you have to purchase seeds from the seed inventory, and then you you're rolling four dice, and those four dice you allocate however you want. You can purchase seed, or you can place seeds in the garden, and then you can choose. One of the coolest things about this game is that you can there's this chaining together mechanism that happens. This mechanic of when you water one of the seeds in the garden, it links together with the seeds next door as long as they're a lower number. So what you want to do is have your opponents actually water their plant and then in turn grow your plant. And then when they harvest their plant, they in turn harvest your plant for you. So you're not wasting your own turn, you're wasting their turns. So it's a really cool game. It's a lot heavier than it looks. And I'm really sad actually, because the game is not easily found. My friend Bob lent me the game, and we've played it a couple times since borrowing it, but I got to give it back to him eventually.
No,
I'm sure
don't
he'll
give things
it.
Back to Bob. Just keep them hidden.
I know. Just take them. Just yes. Keep them. So me and you are both purchasing games from Bob because he's finally doing a little spring cleaning on his collection. So yeah. I'm sure he won't miss him one more game.
My budget on games is going very poorly. Like, I'm making myself so sad.
Yeah. The Kickstarter is ruining me because I've got three games that I'm kickstarting right now, and I'm going to have to give one of them up. So,
yeah.
Sad times.
It's
and
bad.
Then I guess I'll talk about what we will be playing tonight. I just picked up the game Azul. We've talked about it on the podcast before. That was actually one of my top five games of 2017.
Oh, yeah.
And I finally have a copy of it. I have the second edition printing of it, which includes the first player tile, which was something that was originally cardboard in the original version. So I'm really excited about opening this thing up and showing my wife and letting her play it tonight. And I think we'll be playing this with the in-laws tonight, since we're on Easter weekend. But I think it's going to go really well. I'm excited about playing Azul with the family.
Nice. Yeah, I actually picked up a copy of Azul myself this past week. Yeah, and so I'm hoping... Sarah and I, you know, with our little break, I'm hoping that we can actually sneak in some gaming. I don't know because I get to play games with Sarah only so often with just the two of us. And, recently, we played a round of Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, which, you know, I love, but I'm also, she and I are going through Pandemic Legacy. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of have to go back and forth between playing that game and playing Sherlock is kind of how I get Sarah, who likes Pandemic, but it takes a little bit more to get her to play it. So I'm wondering, should I use this to like teach Azul, or I've got a couple other two-player games that I want to get her to play with me, like Fugitive, which I got from Tim Fowers a few months ago. That we still haven't played. Or do I just, you know, break out Pandemic Legacy and we try to get in a round of that. We'll see what I'm able to do.
Sounds awesome, man. Well, we are going to take a quick break. And on the other side of this break, we're actually going to be talking about spring cleaning in your game collection. This was something that we had originally hoped to write a post about, but I think that it'll play out a little better in audio. So we're going to do that on the other side of this break.
Hey, Ryan, we are back, and this week we're going to talk a little bit about spring cleaning, and hopefully nobody runs away from this podcast at just hearing those two words, runs away in terror, Maybe you'll actually listen to this podcast while you're doing some spring cleaning yourself. But this is going to be not about like which is better as like a moth prevention or what's the best mothball or what dust remover do you use. This is going to be about spring cleaning for your board game collection.
That's a touchy subject because I think that we only think about cleaning up our game collection when we run out of space, Rick. I think that's kind of, you know, that's something that we faced up until I think it was November, I think, when we changed around the layout of our dining room and the den area where we kind of swapped things around significantly. But up until that point, I mean, we really ran out of space. We needed a whole nother shelving unit just to put games because they were starting to spill out onto the floor. And you saw that when you came over right in November. So I think October you came over. But we usually only talk about this when we run out of space. But I think being preventative is a lot smarter because you don't get sidetracked with, well, now I have to give something up. This should be something that every once in a while, just taking a couple games and saying, these are the ones I need to get rid of. They're not getting enough play. Nobody really wants to play these. You know, let me go ahead and get rid of them. So what is a tip or a trick that you would give, Rick, for those wanting to do a little spring cleaning of their game collection?
Well, I think part of it is trying to, it can become difficult to determine what is it that I need to get rid of. Probably my hobby could be better described as board game purchasing than board game playing, because I spend a lot more time looking at like sales and things like that versus like rules or actually playing games. It's a little bit ridiculous. And so I actually am in a position where my collection is, there's a few games that I need to get rid of because, you know, we're playing some other stuff. But then I've also got games that I just have never played, and I really don't think that I'm going to get around to playing them. And that can be difficult to determine. And so I think one thing that you've got to do, if you're in a position like you and I and have a pretty substantial board game collection, and this wouldn't be everybody, but you've got to determine and be honest with yourself about what games are actually going to see the table with the people that I'm going to be playing with. You can always try to plan for some gaming group that you're maybe hoping to join, or maybe there's going to be new people that you try to start playing games with. But there gets to the point where you've got to be honest about what am I actually playing right now and what is it that's going to be hitting the table in the near future. I know I am right now have some games listed on a Facebook board game selling group that some of them I've never even played, and some of them I like. I just don't ever see me getting them to the table. And then when I went to Gamerama in February for their flea market, I ended up selling some games that I want to play that I like, but I know that it's going to be a while. Like I sold Galaxy Trucker, which I had a copy of and its expansion, and it just was gathering dust. I couldn't see me playing that anytime in the near future. Same thing with Castles of Mad King Ludwig. I have that game and the expansion, but it never hits the table because it's just a little more complex to set up and explain than most of the people that I'm going to play with are ready for. So games that I really like and I hope to maybe acquire again, but for right now, you know, I needed the board game shelf space and was giving myself money to buy on other games that I think would work better with who I'm going to be playing with.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've had to do, I actually had to do that today. We visited a place called Dice Drop Games in Central Georgia. It's a really, really cool little store, but they had a copy of the Gallerist, a game that I've talked about multiple times and I really, really like, but it for the amount of money that you could spend on that you would spend on it, no matter if you got it on sale or not, the amount of money you'll spend on it versus if it'll ever hit the table, it just doesn't work out. And so one of the things, spring cleaning in my game collection, one of the things that I've had to do is look at what games have other people played and said, I really like this game. This is a game that I really enjoy. How can I, am I going to get that to the table? And if I'm not, why don't I give that to that person? Especially if it's a game that was a $15, $20 game. You know, can I give that, gift that to that person? Because I know some of these families that they don't play games very often. You know, we introduced a family to playing Sequence, and multiple people in their family end up buying Sequence because they loved it so much. So that was something that happened a couple of years ago, and it's just cool. Like, when you introduce somebody to their new favorite game, it's neat to be able to give that thing away. So one of the things you mentioned, and so I'm going to kind of bullet point this for the listeners, you know, you use Facebook Marketplace, yeah. But you also use the flea market at your local convention to get rid of some of your games. So that's an awesome way to do that. For myself, giving a game to a person who has expressed interest, like, I love that game, that was so much fun. You know, if it's still sitting on your shelf and you haven't played it for 6 months, why don't you consider giving that to that person who expressed that they like it so much and maybe they didn't pick it up already? So that's another way, gifting a game, giving it a new home. That's another way we can do some spring cleaning.
Definitely. Yes. If you are selfless like Ryan and not selfish like me. Yeah, that's what you get. No, I mean, it's definitely true. And, you know, a part for me that is somewhat similar is the fact that I have a classroom and I have a bunch of students that are in my classroom 3 times a week. And sometimes we, you know, need a little something to do. And so I've got a collection of board games that I keep there that mm-hmm. I think work best in that environment. And I want to make sure that, you know, those fit with who are actually going to play those. Like, you know, are middle school and high school girls going to actually enjoy playing this game? But it does kind of give me a way to help them see board games beyond just like Monopoly and apples to apples and stuff like that, when I can bring out something that's a little bit newer and maybe a little different than what they've played before. But yeah, I think it's definitely an option. And of course, you know, if you don't feel like, if you don't have anybody that could buy that game or play that game that's in your personal circle of friends, you can always give stuff to Goodwill. You know, I recommend that you give it to me first. But I mean, those different kinds of things obviously work, but I think if you can make a personal connection, I think that always is a little bit better. And you know that that game's going to get into the hands of somebody that's going to enjoy it and not just be, you know, picked up randomly and then maybe never played again as well somewhere else.
Well, another thing, you brought up the school connection. You know, in your classroom, you have these games. And if I know there's a school that I do a reading program with for some third graders through my job. And one of the things that I talked to the librarian about is that they've got, you know, the standard chess, checkers, Moncala, and like two memory games sitting on a very sad game shelf. And so I talked to the school teacher. I was like, I talked to the librarian. I was like, listen, if I start looking through some of my games and start getting rid of some of these things, would you be interested in the age appropriate games for your library? And she was like, definitely. And so think about it this way. If your child goes to a school, public school, a lot of times games are not on their radar. There's a show that I listen to, a podcast that I listen to, on Punchboard Media, which is the network that we're on, Boards Alive. He talks about how as a librarian, he's able to curate these games so that people can enjoy them. I think he teaches high school, one of the hosts. And so it's just really cool if you could be able to gift some of these games. Maybe you've kind of outgrown a lot of times as our kids get older. So my kids are starting to become teenagers. So some of the younger games we really don't have a use for. Like, obviously when my goddaughter comes over, she can play some of the younger games, but outside of that, I mean, I don't need a collection of 25 games for 6-year-olds, you know?
Right.
So donating them to a classroom, to a teacher, or donating them to a school library is a huge win. You know, that's something that you're going to be able to give the gift of gaming to students, and then they're going to go home. I remember when my brother found out about Moncala through, I think there one of his teachers in elementary school taught the class how to play that. He came home, and my mom went out and bought a Moncala board, and we played it as a family. Like, we ended up, that was something that when we were sitting around, that and Chinese checkers were the things that we played when I was really young. And so that's something that you're giving this gift of gaming to the next generation when you donate your games to libraries and schools and things like that. So that's I'm glad you brought up the school connection, because that's another way that you can unload some games that you may not be playing.
Yeah, look at us being so generous and stuff, aren't we?
Yeah, it doesn't always happen, but some days.
Yeah, so. There you go.
So if you do some spring cleaning this season, be sure to comment in the show notes or let us know on Facebook and let us know what you did with some of your games. You may have way better ideas than we do. Chances are you do. We would love to know what you did with some of your old games.
Now paging the Game Doctor. Game Doctor, please report to room 101.
So, Rick, we have a patient that has come in. I'm looking at his file right now. His name is Phil, and he's got some pretty good questions. I think we're going to take this one today. On days when the weather is great or rare beach days, I've often wanted to play games outdoors at a picnic or on a beach blanket. I've learned the hard way that card games are particularly vulnerable to the natural predator, wind. Are there any portable, windproof games that could be considered? Now, outside of dipping your Pokemon cards in lead, what kind of games would you play if you were on a picnic, Rick?
Yeah, I'm very frustrated that you took my joke right off the bat. So now I've got to come up with something.
You had
else.
That one?
Oh, yeah, geez. That was what I was ready to do. No, it reminds me, and I think I posted a little clip of this, when we first interviewed the Gyrating Hamsters folks. We went out back at,
Gamerama,
and, we were filming by the pool, and, to be able to sit at the table, we had moved the umbrella that was kind of, you know, you slide it down through the hole in the middle. We had moved it over to the side and put it up against the fence, and the wind was blowing pretty hard. And we look over, and the umbrella has blown completely over the fence and was starting to roll towards the road. So we, like, Andrew had to leap the fence and go chase down a poolside umbrella while we were in the middle of doing our interview. It's a pretty funny video. If you guys want to chuckle, yeah. That is.
Check out our Facebook. I mean, check out our YouTube channel.
Yeah. So. It's been a while, but yeah, that's definitely worth viewing. That gives me time to kind of look at stuff. I mean, really, unfortunately, a lot of stuff is coming up that I think you couldn't do because you know, there are a lot of components that you don't want to get sandy. You don't want to get, mm-hmm. you know, wet. The wind will destroy them. So things that kind of work well. The first thing that I guess pops into my mind are things that are dice-based. Mm-hmm. So maybe, I don't know, what would be some games? I'm going to pass it right back to you, completely Okay. Fuddle around and then send it right back to you while I continue to look up some possible solutions.
That's what most good doctors do.
Yeah.
So they usually, they're like, I don't have very many answers, but I've got my PA in, so right. We're going to send them in.
Let's see what this other person says before I start talking.
Yeah, yeah. Let me just give you to somebody else. So what about a game like Hanabi? So the game Hanabi is a really good, that you're managing this hand of, in one of the versions of Hanabi, you're managing a hand of cards and you're trying to make this fireworks display. But there's a copy of Hanabi, I think it's Hanabi Deluxe, or maybe it's just a special edition, but that it uses heavy black tiles instead of cards. And so that's, I think, a really great one that you can play at the beach. You could play on, you know, obviously they may not stand the best on a really wrinkly blanket or something like that, but you could definitely make it work, and you're not going to have to worry about any wind if you're playing with the tiles from Hanabi, not the card version of Hanabi. And that's right. That's a fun interactive one. So if you're playing three or four players sitting around on a on a beach blanket, I feel like Kanabi would be a really good pick.
Yeah, I think, yeah, anything that has some heft to the parts, I think works. I think you could also, I mean, it would be kind of weird, but, you know, you could break out like One Night. One Night, I think those thick tiles would work. Don't know that you know, that environment works as well with that particular mood of that game. But I think that, you know, if you're talking just in terms of things that the components are going to do well where you're at, that seems to be a good one. Mm-hmm. Another one I think that you could break out would be, it's got cards for the scoring, but I think given that they stick to one relatively small space, you could take care of it. It's Pass the Pigs Party Edition. Just rolling little rubber pigs, and you could do that on a beach blanket. And if you just kind of put the cards in one little safe place, I think you'd be able to pull that off. So that might be one that kind of, you know, it's silly, you know, it's kind of a more fun, kind of humorous light game that I think you could probably break out of the beach. I think it'd work okay.
Yeah. And I mentioned earlier, you know, we just picked up the game Azul. Azul has these very heavy little tiles. So if wind is not going to blow any of those tiles away, you know, obviously you have to make sure that you have something on the player board, especially when you're just starting. But I would imagine taking Azul if you wanted something a little heavier than just a tile laying game or something like that. Azul might be a good choice because of the heft of the tiles and things like that. Another way, kind of more of a technique versus a game, when you're doing a dice rolling game, rolling inside the box is a really good option. Taking the flipping the box inside out and using that as kind of a dice tray to make sure you're not losing any pieces. I think that would work really, really well. I almost want to say Sagrada because there's so many dice for it. But the only problem with that, you could use the box lid as a rolling surface. The only problem is the scoring cards could get blown around. So
get sand everywhere. Oh, there's a good one. I just found a great one. This one's great. Quirkle. I think Quirkle is pretty solid.
Quirkle is really, really good. That's a great one.
I think Quirkle is, you might think of it as Scrabble. It doesn't really play anything like that other than you're laying tiles down in rows and columns. You're basically mashing shapes to try to maximize your score. I think that Quirkle would work really well. And then that kind of leads me right into Hive. Hive and Hive Pocket, I think, both would... things with big, chunky tiles. I think those would also work. I owned a copy of Hive and never got to actually play it. That was one of the games that went out in a spring cleaning for me one time. It would be a good game to also take out to the beach. I think that would be a good one.
Yeah, Hive's a great choice, especially because Hive is built as a two-player game. So that's another so if you're looking for a really good two-player tile-based game, something that, you know, it's going to be fine if you get sand on it, whatever, that's a great one. Quirkle is an awesome choice too, Rick. Those are really good options. So Quirkle plays good as a two-player game, plays great at 3 and 4, you know.
Definitely.
So another one I would say is Blockus or Blocus or however you pronounce it. That is kind of like this Tetris. You're putting these pieces, these like Tetris looking pieces onto this board, and you're basically there are these placement rules that guide how you put your tiles in there. And so you kind of block people's paths and don't allow them in certain areas. It gets really competitive, especially around our family. And I found at a Goodwill, I found a travel edition of Blockus that was a two-player version. And it comes with all the versions come with a tray, this plastic, heavy plastic tray, and then you're laying the pieces in there and they snap into a grid. So they're not going to get blown around. The pieces, if you were to get sand all over the game, it's not a big deal. You could blow it off with some canned air and you'd be done. That's a really good pick if you wanted block is travel. There's a two-player version, and then the original block is there, that's four players. Those are both really good picks, and that's something that when we travel, the way that it's set up, it actually has a little tray that you can, the travel version has a little tray that you put your pieces in, so it keeps everything in one place. So you could even play it in a car if you wanted to.
Yeah, I think cool. I think we got some options here. I think we've, you know, it started off a little rough. You know, we weren't sure if the patient was going to make it, but we were able to find some remedies there right at the last minute. I'm proud of us, doctor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think that bringing people back from the brink of death, that is it's what we do best,
right,
Rick.
I feel like I'm it's on House. Best. That's what it is.
Yeah. Or I'm one of those brainiac doctors that when I'm thinking, it zooms into my brain, and there's a lot of, like, computer graphics, and then it zooms back out, and then I write a prescription, and everybody's like, wow, man,
that guy's
really
good.
Pulled it out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So... all right, enough bragging about our abilities. And somebody's sitting there saying, those are all stupid games and these guys are morons. I will unsubscribe now.
Well, you know, if that doesn't happen more often than not, then I'm very surprised.
Very surprised. So speaking of subscribing or unsubscribing, thank you for people sharing the show. We really appreciate you guys who have shared the show with your friends and family. We would love it if you would share it even more. We've noticed a pretty decent bump in subscribers, and we're just grateful that you guys are connecting with the One Board Podcast. We appreciate any time we hear nice comments about the show when we're talking to friends and family and people in the community. If you like this podcast, if you like the content that we're making for families and for gamers, please share it. Be sure to share it. You can just easily share oneboardfamily.com/podcast. That's the easiest way to get the RSS feed so you can become a subscriber. You can find us on iTunes and Google Play and all of your podcast feeders and all that great stuff. We have a Twitter account now. So the One Board Family Twitter account. So if you're on Twitter, follow us at One Board Family. I was basically shamed into having this Twitter account from the president of Gray Fox Games. So I appreciate him shaming me into having a Twitter account. It was super nice. I said something about Harvest Dice and we posted something on Twitter, and he came back. He was like, why does One Board Family not have a Twitter account? And I was like, I'm lazy. That's pretty much why.
What a wonderful question. We don't really know.
So we remedied that, and we have only a handful of followers. So be sure to find us on Twitter now. You can always find us on Instagram, where we're posting pictures of what we're playing at Instagram.com, One Board Family. Find us at Facebook at One Board Family. And find us on YouTube. Just search for One Board Family, and you'll find us pretty quickly. So, Rick, that'll do it.
Yes, sir. And until next time, we'll see you
at the table.
Punchboard Media,
where we all
bring something
to the table.
Pull up a chair
at punchboardmedia.com.